This is On the Other Hand. A podcast that explores politics and other issues of importance to Arkansans through conversations with community leaders. On the Other Hand is sponsored by Braver Angels in Arkansas, and Braver Angels is part of a national organization that aims to reduce political polarization by promoting honest but respectful dialogue among people of all political beliefs. We believe our progress as a community and country happens when we actively seek common ground with the other side so that problem solving can occur. So, Glenn, we had a great conversation with Sherry Simon last time, and today is the second part of that two-part conversation that we had with Sherry. And in this episode, we're going to hear more about how Sherry uses communication skills and mindfulness to actually work across the political divide on issues that are important to her.
Be sure to check out the first part of the two-part conversation we had with Sherry. You can reach those podcast links on the Braver Angels Arkansas website at arkansas.braverangels.org/podcast or on your favorite podcast site.
Now, for those people who have studied mindfulness or maybe have dealt with that in their own reading and life circumstances, they might know what you mean. But for those who don't, what is mindfulness to you?
Mindfulness to me is almost a paradox. It's almost no mind, because it's our mind and the things that we hear in our mind that get us in trouble most of the time, right? And so it is the ability to stay grounded within yourself, to stay objective, to stay detached and relaxed and calm while observing what's going on around you so that you might have the most objective response to that you can. It's often ignoring your mind and all the little different triggers that it's telling you and all of the different interpretations that it may be giving you about what's going on around you, and just staying centered within yourself.
I've heard people talk about it before as having a balcony view, almost imagining yourself looking at it from a distance. Okay, this person's up in my face yelling at me. And it's like, what would it look like if I was actually watching this so that that's the detachment I think that you're talking about.
Yes, and that is such a great point, because I often talk about an objective witness that's back here, just as you describe, back kind of over and behind your head, who's watching things but not getting involved in them, just watching.
Yeah, and what would they be saying about it? So, well, you obviously have been able to work successfully across political differences. You said that Pax Christi is not, doesn't affiliate with either you know, any party in particular. So I'd love to hear a story of where you've actually seen that work and actually you've seen it work well. It doesn't have to be with Pax Christi. If it's in another area of your life, that's fine too.
Yes, I can think of another area of my life where, now it took a little time, it didn't happen immediately, but where a dear friend of mine, who we'd always been on the opposite end of the political spectrum, I was always more blue and she was always more red, but that was never the center of our relationship. We volunteered together. She actually, you know, 25, 30 years ago, got me involved in so many different ministries in my church. So we had this history together, just loved one another. And then something happened. COVID hit, certainly. The political divide occurred, let's just say 2016 and 17. And we started not getting along. And she would be one of the major people who would come on the Pax Christi Facebook page and just give me grief. And that had never happened. And so I started having to be thoughtful about using some of these strategies with her, which I never thought would have to happen. But the most interesting thing, I think the thing that finally made the difference and helped us turn the corner together is I started purposefully asking her about other areas of her life and not focusing, because for a while there we were only focusing on political issues and Donald Trump and right or wrong, black or white, you know. So I started to do that. But one day I asked her this question. I just said, you know, and this was so intimate and I was really afraid to ask it, but I said, why do you think that it is that we're so angry with one another now? I said, we never used to be. And yet we're still the same people, I think, but we just can hardly be in the same room with one another without our emotions getting all involved. And she was really quiet for a moment. And then she answered back to me. She said, you know what it is? She said, COVID happened. And I was all by myself in this house. And all I've done is watch news. And it has scared me what I've seen. And I am so worried that, you know, if Donald Trump doesn't solve the problem, or if the Republicans don't, you know, have the power, then our whole democracy is going to unravel in front of us. And so we then just started talking about that fear and what it was like sitting alone in her house, you know, for really for a couple of years, because she was super careful. She was a little bit older and she was completely alone there. And I won't say that she completely turned around, and she certainly didn't turn around in her political persuasion. But after that conversation, she and I have been a lot better. We really don't talk about it much anymore. But the major emotion isn't up there the minute we see each other anymore either. She got really vulnerable with me.
It takes that vulnerability sometimes, and even the willingness to ask questions of curiosity that aren't that are more aimed towards the relationship that we want to be developed, kind of seeing a future together in our relationships. Yeah.
Yes, and I think the asking the we is important instead of why do why are you angry? Why are we angry? I mean, I'm owning my own upset
So
here
you were
as
able to
well.
share your own thoughts at that point as well.
Right,
That was
not
really nice.
specifically, but just the general question of we're both upset, we're both angry. Yeah. The word that I've often used to describe that politeness or niceness is kindness. I mean, I don't think we have enough of that in
No
our
kidding.
world, a thoughtful kindness. And I know for me, when someone's kind to me, I'll work with them. I want to work with them, whether they agree with me or not. If they're kind, I'm drawn to them. So why wouldn't we want to draw people to us and connect? Because I think that's at the center of all of it, is making connections with one another so that we can do this work that we have to do.
It's also about approaching the relationship not as I'm going to try to win you over or I'm going to try to convert you. I know in my own faith community background, I mean, there's you want conversions, right? You want people to come into the faith. But if my only reason for being in relationship with you is to try to convert you, it's not a genuine relationship. Same thing can be true of political dialogues as well.
Yes, and I find that so disrespectful. If I'm coming into a conversation with you and I think it's my job to try to make you see things differently, I find that disrespectful. I obviously haven't heard what you've had to say because I have my own agenda. So, yes, I agree.
I'm kind of curious about something. You indicated a little bit back that you kind of are on the blue side. Is that still the case that you'd see yourself more somewhere in the blue spectrum?
Absolutely, absolutely. I find that I'm bluish, but and I say almost purplish because I see the value of moderate, rational Republicans being a big part of the conversation. I think they bring something to the table that many Democrats don't have.
Absolutely.
So.
But that doesn't, Just to clarify, that doesn't mean that people who aren't moderate Republicans don't also bring something to the table.
I agree with you. I think, yes, I absolutely, I'll just leave it at that. I agree.
And I would say, you know, that's true on both ends, because, you know, one of the things I've looked at is some of the research on political extremists, and they have a lot in common on both sides. So, but you know, it may be more their approach and the difficulties they bring socially. But, you know, even those extremists sometimes have a good idea. It's back way back when people, you know, a century or two back that were trying to abolish slavery were probably seen socially as very extreme and rigid and, you know, way out there on the end. So just being extreme by itself doesn't make you have a bad idea.
I agree. I think when I was talking about that, and I agree that it's in both parties for sure, the fringe who touts political ideas with no evidence, that conspiracy theories and things like that, I do think they need to be heard, because there's plenty of that out there. I'm not sure how amenable they are to looking at anyone else's point of view. So that's sort of, when I said that, that's what sort of what I mean there, when someone is not rational at all in their approach.
Yeah. The other thing I'd say is, you know, in terms of not being rational, one of the things I've understood from looking at all the you know, research on political polarization is we all are irrational quite often, much more than we realize. Okay. We have this smarter part of the brain where we can rationalize and intellectualize why we're acting or believing a certain way. But a lot of times what really underlies it is strong emotion. But anyway.
Well, yeah. I mean, Jonathan Haidt talks about that, right? I mean, he talks about, is it the rational side of us that controls ourselves, and what does he call it, the elephant and the rider. And he really, I mean, in his book, The Righteous Mind, he really comes against a lot of the political philosophers and psychologists that talk about, oh yeah, our rational side can control our emotions, and often says that it's our rational side or our that actually tries to make sense of our emotional behaviors.
I will say, the way I view it, I mean, he does talk about how powerful the emotional side is and how much it dictates what we do. I think it's not that it's powerless, the rational mind. Rather, it is a very strong uphill climb to maintain your values and your rational approach when emotion and tribalism get involved. So it's, in fact, in our field, one of the things that's talked about a lot when you're trying to improve a relationship, we talk about the 5-to-1 rule. Some people say the 3-to-1 rule. It's the idea of making sure that when you're dealing with someone, this is typically, let's say, with a parent, you know, deal with a kid, try to have 5 positive moments for every single negative moment you have. Because as a parent, you're going to have negative moments with your children. You have to. But to make the relationship stronger, take pains to minimize when you have to have the negative moments, and don't do them unnecessarily, and make sure you build in lots of positives. So, and that's thought to be underlying this whole survival fight flight thing, the emotional stuff that makes us make decisions and engage in behaviors based on non-rational factors. So the 5-to-1 rule, then, it's seen as based in brain and evolution influences. That is, we know that we naturally pay attention more readily to negative events in our environment compared to positive events, because the brain has evolved to perceive any potentially negative stimuli as potential danger signals. Now, that naturally kicks us into survival or fight-flight mode. And since positive moments or events are not nearly as powerful then as negative events, that's why we use the 5-to-1 rule, because it takes a lot more positive moments to overcome a few negative events. So the lesson to me then is always try in our interactions with other people to limit the negative interactions we have with them, and instead do our best to increase the positive moments with those folks. So when we do that, we're aiming for that 5-to-1 positive to negative ratio to overcome the natural tendencies that arise from the evolutionary pressures to pay attention to any potential danger signals that might threaten our survival. I hope that makes sense.
The 5-to-1, I was just talking about this in my class yesterday, actually. John and Julie Gottman's work on that. And I showed them a clip from Julie Gottman and John in an interview. And Julie was talking about that these don't have to be large things. I mean, the positive things could be a thank you, it could be a pat on the shoulder, it could be, turning towards another person when they're talking to you, when they're making a bid. They might be looking out the window and saying, "That's a really cool sunset." And rather than just ignoring that, you're like, "Wow, that is really cool. That's an example of a positive interaction." So it doesn't mean that I'm having to do something really huge in the relationship.
I think I've heard something now already, Sherry, about how you handle dealing with the difficult moments with people. So you've told us some things about that. Do you have anything else to add about how you deal with folks who just don't want to compromise or see any other side? Any other thoughts that you haven't already shared?
Only that, Glenn, I really want to try my best to be patient with that. I'm not always very patient, but I know that oftentimes it will take more than one or two encounters. And that I do also know that the more that I get to know someone and the more I allow them into me and get to know me, it does get a little bit easier over time. So I think the longevity of a relationship and the number of times that you have conversation with someone can make a di big difference. I try not to be too pessimistic if the first encounter is really negative, because I think, well, they still don't know me. I don't know them yet. So I think we say this to people in relationships and marriages as well. It takes time. It takes presence with one another to do this work. So we have to allow that in this instance as well.
I also like the idea of presence. What does it mean to actually be present in the presence of another? Yeah, just like that.
April, you actually triggered that in me when you were saying about it just takes small things like someone looking at a sunset and you being present enough there to be able to appreciate that sunset with them. That's huge. I think that's a really big deal that when you can be enough connected with someone that you value what they're bringing to you.
I have a thought based on something you said earlier on when we were talking about Pax Christi. Pax Christi believes in the pursuit of peace, social justice, equity, and I'm interested in your thoughts because I know you've probably heard this from people who maybe criticize some of what you do, but I'm just curious, how would you answer this idea of balancing doing for others and promoting those things, because you did talk about people who don't have enough, that that's not consistent with a peaceful world, and I would agree. But how do you balance doing things for others and helping out versus the idea, the concern about promoting dependence on external factors or relying on handouts, that whole thing?
That is a great question. And that's that you, boy, you really have to wind your way through those two things for sure. But if I can give you a personal example there, Pax Christi Little Rock is helping Christ the King sponsor an Afghan family that just came to the States or came to Little Rock in December of last year. And I have learned so much personally about that path between helping and promoting dependence with this family. And it's such an important thing every day to keep right in front of you. Certain things I think need to be provided to people, for example, minorities, that because they don't have access to any of it. And let's talk about things like food and like education and housing. Those sorts of things, those should be rights, right, that everyone should have. So we want to be sure that we do everything we can to be sure that they have those things. However, when you get into feeling like these folks can't make it without me, or they'll never, do well unless I, then it becomes, I think that dependency thing always happens when you feel like you're the irreplaceable one, like you've got to do this or horrible things will happen. I've learned so much about myself during this process and how to look at that dependency issue, because anytime our ego gets in it, there's dependency. I think that's my sort of rule of thumb with that. Anytime I think I'm necessary for this equation, there's going to be dependency and I'm making a mistake.
That's interesting. So the idea of ego, I have to remember that. I have one, thank you for that. And I have one other thought, and then I'll turn it back over to April. And it's just, you may have implied this by some of the other things we've talked about so far, but if you could just be explicit about some suggestions that you might have for how we can work together here in Arkansas despite having the differences that we do, with the goal of creating a better community. What do you think about that?
Absolutely. Well, what I have found personally in that, we're really, even though we're a Catholic peace and social justice movement, we're actually ecumenical in makeup. We work with all different faiths and prefer to do that. And what I have found there then is that all different kinds of folks, politically different people, as well as faith differences, can work really well together when there are specific projects and specific tasks that all agree are going to be helpful in some way. So I actually try to stay away from the big theoretical dialogues with people in Pax Christi when I know that they're coming from a different space. For example, we have many Republicans who do projects with us in Pax Christi. A lot more than I realized, by the way. Sometimes I'll be talking with someone who's helping with our food pantry, and it's like suddenly I realize they are a fairly conservative Republican, but they love getting together a food pantry to help a previously homeless person as they move into their new home. So the long answer that I just gave really is all about finding a space where you can have agreement with something that is helpful to the system, to the people.
Your walk for justice, I'm not sure that's exactly the name of that you call, is an example of that. I participated in that as a representative of Braver Angels in the last couple of years. And what I saw with, as you read the names of people that have died in the last year at the act of violence in Arkansas, and as I see people's, who are reading or reading poetry or sharing something or reading names, and I, see who they are and what their representation is, it's representing from all kinds of groups coming together and finding common ground to support something that they all think is important. So that's beautiful.
The Pilgrimage for Peace is one of the things
That's what
I'm
it's called.
Pilgrimage for Peace. Yes, Pax Christi has just sort of headed that up for the last 3 years. But it's one of my favorite things because, again, my favorite word is connection. And I think of the metaphor of a jigsaw puzzle. How many different kinds of people can we connect with? Different shapes, different colors, different, these jigsaw puzzle pieces, in order to make the beautiful picture of our society that we're after. And if they were all red puzzle pieces or all blue puzzle pieces or green, it would be not very interesting at all. So the Pilgrimage for Peace really symbolizes to me that opportunity of how beautiful it looks when people come together in a like-minded way for peace and justice, something I think that everyone really wants in their lives. We just have different ideas about how to get there sometimes.
And that's where we disagree sometimes. That's the beautiful thing about finding things in common, is that we often have the same values that we all want to, that we're thinking about and that are close to our heart. It's just the way of getting to the solution, or solving some of those wicked problems might be a little bit different. So one last question. I'd love to have people, you tell us a little bit about how people could get involved with Pax Christi if they would be interested, give us an idea.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, just to get information about who we are and what we do, you can go to PaxChristiLittleRock.org. We have a website. It's constantly in a state of being worked on, but you will get some information about what we do and our current projects.
Sherry, you might spell Pax Christi for folks.
Thank you, because that's very confusing. So it's Latin, and it means the peace of Christ. It's PaxChristi, Pax Christi. And our website, again, is PaxChristiLittleRock.org. And on there, actually, one of the things that you'll see almost immediately is we do have a monthly speaker series that I mentioned earlier today, where we have people, different organizations come, different representatives from these organizations come who are also working on social justice issues. Would love to have people come. We meet over at Fitzgerald Hall in St. John's Catholic Center the third Thursday of every month at 6:30, and have a different group coming each time. Yes, and on the website you can see all the different smaller projects that we engage in with folks. We've done things as big as going to Puerto Rico on three different missions after Hurricane Maria. We went on three different trips to Puerto Rico to rehab houses and to help some of the folks there come out from under that tragedy. But even some smaller things, like we work with our Catholic youth groups to make hygiene bags that folks can pass out to people on the street who might not have, you know, water or hand sanitizer or snacks, those kinds of things. So we're always coming up through our model of prayer, study, and action, always coming up with new ideas to meet the needs of what we see in front of us.
So I'm assuming because you started the chapter here that you see a lot of hope for Arkansas in particular in terms of its politics and, you know, where the future might take us. So any last thoughts about those hopes for Arkansas in particular?
I absolutely do. I mean, even though, as I said earlier, we're not a political organization, I have had the opportunity to speak to many politicians over these past 6 years, and there is a dialogue going on anyway, I think, at least informally, and I appreciate that. People are willing to say where they stand, and my belief is that as long as we're talking, as long as we're still dealing with one another, that there is hope.
That's a good thing to end with. As long as we're talking, as long as we're dealing with one another, there is hope. Glenn, that's one of the things I'm taking away from our conversation today, which is that whole idea of listening respectfully, leading to creative ways to solve the problem. And, you know, just thinking about practicing these communication skills that we've been talking about, listening and speaking in our own relationships, even if they might be not necessarily about the political realm that we're having the conversation about, but other kinds of difficult dialogues as well. What are you taking away today, Glenn?
Well, two things really struck me. I really like the comment about, you know, if you're promoting dependence, it's probably because your ego has gotten involved. So that's a good reminder to watch one's ego, because then you feel like you're indispensable. They can't do without you, and that's not true ever with anybody. So I like that one. The other thing I liked a lot, and I feel like we probably could have explored it more and maybe learned some more things, but the idea of peace and nonviolence being an active endeavor. So I think that was important. So when I, you know, a lot of people, I guess the idea is that when you think of peace, you're thinking about inaction, you know, just being calm and not doing anything. But it's not at all that, is what I'm hearing from Sherry. Well, Sherry, I really appreciate you joining us today. It's been a fascinating conversation. I love what I've heard from you, and I think our listeners will too. So thanks so much for being here with us, and have a good day.
Thank you so much, both of you, for this opportunity. It was wonderful talking with you.
And, you know, Glenn, we'd love to hear from our listeners about feedback on what you'd like about our program. You know, you could give us ideas for speakers or topics or suggestions for improvement or whatever you want to share with us. To do that, email us at otherhandar@gmail.com. Again, that's otherhandar@gmail.com.
On the Other Hand is sponsored by Braver Angels in Arkansas. Music was composed by Randall Standridge of Jonesboro, Arkansas, and was performed by the University of Northern Colorado Symphonic Band, Dr. Richard Main, conductor.
From your host, April Chatham Carpenter,
and Glenn White,
we hope you have a good evening, and let's all work to bring our community closer together.